Blog Talk Radio.
There's so many questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life's lessons and help us to learn just what's important and what matters most. Much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand, lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, and I'm proud to boast I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach to never surrender your hopes or your dreams. And always remember, you've got to believe. Though trouble and hard times may well take their toll, wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chance take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach. To one who will always be known.
All right, welcome to a live edition of Carson's Corner, the MMA show. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here on this Friday evening, and we are sorry about the late start to the show. Folks, if I told you what a terrible day I had, you probably would believe it because you've listened to the show for a long time and you know the struggles that I've gone through over the past 5 or 6 years. It's definitely a part of the show. And my car broke down today. I was going to drive to work, and my transmission was really, really bad. I couldn't drive it, so I had to take the lovely New Jersey Transit bus to my place of work, and that was an extravaganza. Believe me, I had to take a cab to work, which cost me $7, and then if I wanted to take a cab to and from work from home, it would cost me $20. And so I was supposed to start the show at 8 o'clock today, and I knew about an hour before the show, I knew that I wasn't going to get back in time for 8 o'clock. And so our guest today, Tom Glicchio, who is fighting Kurt Southern at the next MFC, MFC 39, which we're all very excited about. You know, over the years, we've had a really good relationship with Mark Pavlich, the great folks over at the Maximum Fighting Championship. Scott Zurr is their media guy, and we've been working with him for God knows how long, for 6 or 7 years. And I got to tell you, out of all the promotions that we've worked for or work with, Maximum Fighting Championship is by far the easiest. They are by far the most accessible because I think Pavlich and Scott and Mark's son and Mark's wife, they understand the nature of MMA media. They understand the the online culture and what it takes and how you promote these shows and how you do the interviews. And Pavlich is just phenomenal to have on this show. Eddie Goldman often has Pavlich on his show, and they wind up talking about anything other than the MFC events because Mark Pavlich is such an interesting character. He's such a firebrand, if you will. You know, this guy is very, very outspoken. That's him. It's not him. You know, some guys do it as a shtick, and some that's just the way Mark Pavlich is, and that's why we love him here on Carson's Corner. That's why Pavlich has been a mainstay on Carson's Corner, and he'll probably be on the show sometime next week because you've got the MFC 39 coming up on May 9th. And I wanted to interview Tom Glicchio because Tom is a New Jersey fighter. And Tom is someone I've actually watched many years. I'm not sure where he started. I know at one point he trained at Team Rhino, which used to be out of Brick, New Jersey. Frankie Edgar used to train there, and I don't think that they're in existence, if I'm not mistaken. They may be, but I haven't heard that they're still around. I went there a few years ago, interviewed one of their local fighters who was making his professional debut in Ring of Combat, and I know a lot of guys from Rhino Fight Team. He used to train under there. He probably started out under Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, maybe even Kurt Pellegrino. But Tom has been around a long time, and he has a pretty impressive record. I remember watching him fight in M1, in M1 Global. And when he went to the MFC, a lot of people were counting him out against Kurt Southern. You know, we had Pavlich on the show a couple weeks before that fight, and everybody was saying that, he was an underdog. Excuse me. And he didn't really have a shot and whatnot, but he really surprised a lot of people and finished that fight. And there's going to be a rematch. And that's a very, very important rematch. We're going to take a brief time out here. I'm sorry. My throat is freaking killing me.
There's so many questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons and help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher. And we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, and I'm proud to boast. I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach. Wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. Our blessings and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known as the coach.
Back live here on the air. So, you know, we're supposed to be talking to Tom Galicchio. He's supposed to be calling in. He's actually training now, and we're very, very excited to talk to him because, like I said, I've been following him for a long time. And, you know, this is a guy who really, you know, depending upon how well he does in May, you know, you can wind up seeing him in a bigger promotion. You can wind up seeing him in the UFC. You never know. You know, he's a interesting guy, and I always like interviewing, if I can, New Jersey fighters. I mean, we've had on the Miller brothers, okay, Jim Miller, Tom Miller, and aside from, we've had a couple other New Jersey fighters, but the Miller brothers definitely have been the most well-known here on Carson's Corner. And it's good because you know that I've been a part of New Jersey MMA, the history of this this sport in this state, and it's something that I still follow to this day. I mean, you could track Tom's career back to sport fighting, and you know those of us that have really followed MMA, particularly on the East Coast, definitely are familiar with sports fighting. And you know, one of the interesting things about Tom, or one of the interesting wins on his career, and he's got some decent wins here. Mark Stevens was on The Ultimate Fighter, and Mark Stevens actually was a pretty decent welterweight. He's got a win over him. That was his first fight. And then he's got a win over Igor Gracie at Ring of Combat 18. And that was really an upset. A lot of people weren't giving Tom any chance to win that fight. And he also has a fight against Rick Horn in which he lost a decision. But, you know, Rick Horn is really a world-class fighter who definitely is someone to put down on your resume. I fought that guy, and you know, I fought him to a decision, which I think is very impressive in itself. And so we're going to wait for him to call in. Also, we may be talking to Eric Prindle. Eric has really been wanting to come on the show, and we've had a long time relationship with Eric Prindle, who I consider to be my friend. And he's supposed to call in, although he's camping with his family. And he said he'd be able to find time to do the interview. So we're going to try to have him on the program. We had the Ultimate Fight Night the other night on Wednesday, and there's so many cards now. And now you've got the UFC tomorrow with Travis Brown and Fabricio Verdum. And, you know, just some thoughts on and then you've got the new season of The Ultimate Fighter, Brazil versus the United States with Frank. I mean, just you can't even keep up with it. I can't keep up with it. And you know what? I think these guys that are getting paid to do this, that work for these, you know, these so-called news sites, I don't think they could keep up with it. There's so many fighters, so many events. It's very difficult. It really is. And how many fighters does the UFC have on their roster? You know, 300-400 fighters. It's ridiculous. I half the time, you know, when I watched the last Ultimate Fighter, I didn't recognize any of these guys. I mean, you know, you have Patrick Cote versus Kyle Noak. I think we had Kyle Noak. We may have had Kyle Noak on years ago. And you know, of course, everybody recognizes Patrick Cote. Everybody's familiar with his career. Tim Kennedy versus Michael Bisping. Yeah, everybody's familiar with those two guys. But some of the other guys on that card, I've never heard of. It's just, you know, the first time that I've seen them. And, you know, that's what the UFC is really banking on, is the fighters in the future. These young guys, and unfortunately, we have a system now. We have basically a sport, you know, mixed martial arts, where your shelf life, the life of a fighter is just, you know, 1 or 2 years. It's really, really, you know, a shame. You see these fighters that are in their 30s, in their early 30s, already over the hill, you know, retiring. Because that's just the nature of the sport. These fighters depreciate in such a cruelly enhanced market, as we see right now. And I just, you know, it's almost depressing. It really is. I mean, you look at someone like Michael Bisping, who recently lost to Tim Kennedy, and it was kind of a boring fight, but it was an okay fight. I give Tim Kennedy credit. He really worked hard for the takedowns, and you can make an argument that he even beat Bisping on the feet. I think there's a lot of truth to that. But look at a guy like Bisping, who's 35 years old, and you know, really, as an elite of a fighter as he has been, where does he really have to go in the sport right now? You know, what is he going to do? What is he going to put together? 2 or 3 more wins and try to get a title shot? It's not likely. And it's unfortunate. And it's not that I have any animosity towards Michael Bisping. It's just the reality of the sport. And where is this all leading? And you know, is the UFC in decline? Who knows? These are all very, very interesting questions. And while this is happening, you have medical research that is starting to come out, and you've got people like Eddie Goldman that have been saying this for a long time that, you know, as the science catches up, this is going to be the sport of mixed martial arts, the amount of impact that these fighters, I mean, you look at the Sam Stout fight versus KJ Nunes, and it's just, you know, the brutality of that knockout and how Sam Stout, after getting knocked out, was trying to wrestle with the referee, just, you know, going through instincts and everything. And, you know, you wonder what type of effect that's going to have on him. And so that was Tom actually calling my cell phone. Let's see if he calls in to the program here. If not, I'll try to give him a call and see if we can get him live on the air. But I presume that he's ready. He's done with his training, and we're very, very excited to have him on the program. It should be very, very fun. You know, we always like having MFC fighters on the program. And next week, we're probably going to have Mark Pavlich himself on the program. And that should be very, very interesting. And so we'll see what happens. But Mark Pavlich is never afraid about Tom?
Yes, yes.
Hey, how are you, man? This is Bob Carson. We're live on the air. You good to go?
Yeah, I'm good to go. How's it going, Bob?
Good, man. Thanks for coming. I've been telling my audience now for a while how excited we are to get you on the program. I've been following you in your career for a long time, and you know, now you're with the MFC, of course. In your first fight versus Kurt Southern, going into that fight, a lot of people were expecting a decisive victory for Kurt. You were almost a 3-1 underdog on sports books, and Mark Pavlich and I were talking about this before the first fight, and it was just a real surprise to everybody, but. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, you stopped his momentum, you choked him out and everything. Before we talk about that fight itself, you narrowly, and I mean narrowly, missed weight for that fight. I mean, I think it ultimately was an advantage for Southern, but it didn't matter. You missed weight by something like 0.2 pounds, I read.
Yep, 0.2 pounds. You're absolutely right, sir. In Canada, you only get one chance to step on that scale. And unfortunately, on my scale, I was on weight, but that one I was off by 0.2 pounds. And let me, for the record, it was teetering a little bit. It was going from 0.0 to 0.2. They let me just wipe the sweat off, I would have got it.
Oh, man. Because, you know, if that had happened in the United States, you know, there's things you could do. But, you know, with the commissions there, it's slightly different. How did the MFC take that? Were they, how did the Pavlich and the guys, were they kind of understanding? Because from what it sounds like, it wasn't like, you know, irresponsible on your part or all. It just was a matter of, you know, calibration.
Well, here's how it is. Pardon my French, but he was fucking pissed.
Yeah.
He was incredibly mad at me and wanted to see me lose in the worst way possible and wanted to see me embarrassed. He said he already had he was ready to fire me, and he had my papers written out, and he was going to embarrass me on the Internet.
Oh, wow.
They were already embarrassing me on the Internet. But it's not like I didn't try. I'm not like some of these guys who miss weight by that. It was, I literally went from the sauna to the weigh-in.
Yeah, and exactly what went wrong with the weight cut? I mean, why couldn't you just shed the last 0.2 pounds? I mean, why they not allow you to do it? Or you know, it's just...
Well, here's what happened. I didn't realize there was a sauna in the hotel. I thought I had to go to the one in the gym across the street. When I got to the gym, first of all, my bathtub did not get warm. It didn't even get warm. I usually do it in the bathtub, and it takes me 40 minutes to shed 6 pounds. Easy. But, yeah, my bathtub wouldn't get warm, and I'm like, oh, man, time's ticking. So I went across the street to the gym. The sauna wasn't on. and it was a big sauna room, so I had to, it has time to heat up, so I had to run back to my hotel room, grab every piece of clothing in my luggage, and I ran 5 miles.
Now, a lot of people were saying that it wasn't even going to matter due to the MFC rule, I believe, that allows fighters who did make weight to still win the title, and that's definitely a good rule, although it didn't come into play since you choked out Southern empathetically. Let's talk about how the fight played out and your impression. Actually, before I get to that, how intimidating was Pavlich? Because, you know, Pavlich, I from what I've seen and what I've heard, he could, when he gets mad, man, he could really get going.
Well, you know what? I'm not intimidated by no man. You know, we're the same person in the end. We're all born together with the guarantee that we're going to die. So I'm not intimidated by no man. And I've been in this sport for a long time. I deserve respect. So I'm not going to be pushed around by anybody.
Yeah.
No way, shape, or form.
I hear you, man. That's what I admire about an MMA fighter. Is just that, you know, me, a guy, I tried MMA years ago, and it was a real disaster. I mean, I'm just not cut out for that. I kind of cower easily. But going back to the fight, your impression of Southern as an opponent, both of you guys are excellent grapplers, but I know you also have the very useful wrestling background. Am I right in saying that you wrestled in high school but weren't able to compete in college due to financial issues?
Yes, sir. I had partial scholarships to Wagner and Drexel, but we all know those are expensive universities, you being an East Coast man.
Yeah.
They are very, very expensive universities, and I financially could not afford it.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's unfortunately, it's getting worse. And that has to be, incredibly tough as a competitor, as a person. But my understanding is also that you found your way into MMA, and I was speculating about this at the beginning of the show, with your connection with Frankie Edgar. Did you start with Edgar at Team Rhino, or how'd that come about?
Yeah, well, actually, I started with him when he was in college and I was in high school. My old coach, Steve Rivera, of Elite Wrestling, would have, when Frankie's in town, he'd have him come in and beat me up. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after, I fell short in high school of my goals. About my 19th birthday, I asked him, where's Frankie training? What's going on? I want to start fighting. I want to throw my hat in the mix. And then I got hooked up with the Rhino Fight Team.
You're listed as being a Team Quest fighter now. How did that end up coming about? I mean, where you started out in New Jersey and you ended up with Team Quest.
Oh, interesting story. I was at Kurt Pellegrino's gym,
Yep.
I went to Bomb Squad for a little bit. I went to Mike Massandio's for a little bit, but I spent a good chunk of the time at Kurt Pellegrino's, and it just wasn't a full MMA gym at the time. It was mostly, yeah, my grappling was great, my wrestling was good, but I needed work on my striking, and I needed more guys my weight. I needed a one-stop shop. Now, I called everywhere. I first went to Duke Rufus. I tried to contact Duke Rufus heavily because I already had a fighter house, and I knew he was predominantly stand-up. He never got back to me. He never even reached out to me. I tried Jackson's. They never got back to me. I tried AKA. They never got back to me. I went down the list. And then I'm like, does anybody even want me? Am I even good enough to be at these gyms? This is when I was in at the M1 Global. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Dan Henderson's got a gym, and it's got tons of good guys. Mm-hmm. Like, how could I forget about his Team Quest? And I called him up, and he's Sims picked up the phone, and he he's like, well, are you a professional? Are you an amateur? What's going on? I'm like, oh, I'm a professional. He's like, how many fights you have? I think I was like 15-4 at the time or something like that, or 16-6. I don't know where I was at in my career at that point. He's like, oh, wow. He's like, yeah, come on down. And then within like 3 or 4 days, I had my flight booked and I was out there.
Well, that's awesome.
I tried it out, and then they asked me to stay, and I went back, grabbed my stuff, and drove across country.
And who were some of your training partners there?
Oh, shoot. We could go down the line. I mean, of course, there's Dan Henderson, you know, the head honcho. I get to mix it up with him from time to time. Me being a little small, and he's fighting a lot bigger guys, I don't get to mix it up with him as much as the other guys. But I got Sam Alvey fighting main event for the middleweight title. We got Jesse Taylor, stud, top 20 at 85. I got my buddy Brandon Morris. He's a tough kid. He's coming up. I got Fernando Gonzalez, who's another WEC vet, real tough guy, real technical, helps the team overall. Tarek Safadine, he's about to win that title. He's a few fights away. He's really gonna win that 170 title. Mark my words.
Well, you know, it's almost good that you made the transition, because now, you know, they say everything happens for a reason, and now, you know, you're with a good team, a high caliber team. You can improve other areas of your game, like the striking. And I was telling people, now you're really in a position where, you know, you're potentially in the prime of your career, and so now you can, you know, really break out and vie to fight for a very high promotion, maybe like the UFC and whatnot, if you desire to. And so I think that's it, it's I'm sure that you're happier that you found Team Quest and everything. How long have you been with them for?
About 2.5 years. I had an injury that kept me out for a couple of months. I tore my meniscus and MCL. But I came back here, and then my career turned around.
Yep.
At first, it was a little rocky with the move. You know, you got to get used to your training camp. If I could tell young fighters anything, don't switch before a fight. You know, finish your camp, then after your fight, switch a gym. You know, because you got to get used to the gym first, and training and training partners. But I'm at a great point in my career, and you know, this is the highest I've been ranked on the ranking sites. You know, I'm fighting for the title again. You know, Kurt Southard's a great competitor and a highly ranked guy himself. You know, we're both ranked higher than some of the UFC guys. And our talent level, I feel, is better than some of the UFC guys at 155. I watched some 155 fights, it's sloppy. And, you know, me and Kurt Southard, very technical fight.
Now, let's talk about the first fight, because it looked like he was in control early, landed some strikes and put you on the mat, and was going for a guillotine choke that you escaped. Everyone knows wrestlers are tough, but you seem like a pretty hard-nosed guy who's willing to go at it full throttle. Has learning the submission defense and the practice requires been your biggest challenge in terms of progressing as a fighter, or it's just that you were always naturally good on the ground? And you just have to...
I was always naturally good on the ground. Actually, if you watch the video tape closely, the ref pulled me in that guillotine. The ref grabbed my legs and put me in his guard. I was already past his guard in size control where he can't choke me. I did it right off the takedown. The ref grabbed my legs and pulled it. I guess he said, Kurt Southern's not doing a good enough job with the guillotine. Let me step in. No, really, you could see it. Watch the video. You could watch the ref pull my legs right into his guard. And that's frustrating, too. I mean, I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Checkmat, and Checkmat's the number one team in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu right now. So I'm very good on the ground, and not to toot my own horn, I mean, there's always room to get better, but, you know, I'm definitely a top-notch grappler, and I've beaten some good grapplers in grappling tournaments.
Do you feel like you've turned a corner in your career in terms of maintaining your aggression, but also being careful and defensive, especially in the first part of a fight?
I've learned to control and not go all out. I've learned to really fight smart and honed it. It's just having these great coaches. I have some of the best coaches in the world, and they've taught me well and taught me how to fight smart and not to make it in a street fight. And fight technical. And I feel I have turned a huge corner being out of here. It took a little fine, but made my cut to 55. I'm ready to start banging on everybody's door. Coming to the front door and going to be taking belts.
Now, it felt like you were in control, and basically in that fight just systematically broke him down, first with punches and then working methodically for the submission. Once round two started, did you get the sense that you were in control and the fight was yours to be won?
Yes, at some point in round one I did, although I was scared with that guillotine. The guillotine really, really scared me. It was close, but about a quarter of the way through round one, I had a feeling I had that fight won and in the bag. I just knew it. And I just knew to maintain my guns. And you know, everybody's been, you know, a lot of people tell me that I lost round one, which I agree, I did lose round one. Miletic made it out like I was getting killed, but I think me and Kurt Southern both know the difference.
Now, both of you guys are known as finishers, and at times you've almost, you know, had to be killed, grappling style in your fights. And since you and Southern share some similarities as fighters, at least on paper, what was it that you think set you apart from him and helped you get such a decisive victory? I mean, are there any specific factors you think helped you with the win?
He might be older, but I'm a bigger veteran. And a lot of people don't realize, I fought a lot of the top guys locally at 170. If not, I mean, you look at my resume, I definitely have a more impressive fight resume, as guys have been beaten. And, you know, a lot of guys counted me out who didn't know me, but I guarantee everybody in Jersey knew what time it was.
Do you think your record is deceptive at this stage? I mean, don't get me wrong, 18-8 is very solid in MMA, where it's so unpredictable, but you certainly fought above the level of your record when you were in there with Southern. Is this something common to fighters who have passed through Team Quest? I mean, you know, or is it to be expected?
It's hard to say through Team Quest or through anything. Different guys come from different areas and different scenarios. I feel like Jersey tests their fighters earlier, you know, because they got a strong athletic commission, the best athletic commission in the world, I might add.
Right.
Their fights are in Atlantic City. They're pairing up the best guys that they can, making great matchups, and it's not guys looking for gimmies. They're weeding them out and making the best matchup. Down here in California, they have a exploding gladiator challenge, and they can have the potential to make good cards, but they take all the good fighters and put them up against nobodies. And I guess these California guys are okay with padding their records, some of them, but I don't think that's cool, and I think it's kind of disgusting.
There are quite a few guys to have come through the Team Quest camp at one point or another who went on to achieve a lot in major organizations despite losing fights on the way up. I mean, Ed Herman, Chael Sonnen, even Randy Couture lost a few in rings in the UFC. Can you tell the folks listening a bit about getting your experience inside the ring, learning from losses and the path you've taken to now being a title contender in the MFC and other shows like it?
Well, listen, this sport is a streak sport. You got to always keep that in mind. You know, Dennis Kang went 8-8 before he put on a, 20-some-odd fight win streak or a 16-fight win streak. So there's always a – it's not boxing. You know, if you're 8-8 in boxing, you got to hang it up. But this sport is so different. There's so many ways to win and lose. You just got to constantly learn and evolve.
Yeah, you've been in there with guys like Rick Horn, who just destroys people in most of his fights, and you were able to hang in there even at a much earlier stage of your career. So you must have had the sense that you were knocking on the door of a high level for success, you know, even back then. And so it's definitely what you're saying, putting in the hours and putting in the fights is definitely paying off. Let's talk about the rematch with Southern before I let you go back to training for a chance to claim the title. What steps are you taking to make sure the weight mishap doesn't come back to haunt you this time?
I know where everything is now. I know where everything is. I'm better prepared with the facilities and the amenities that offer around the area. And it wasn't like I was 6 pounds out the day of in the morning. So it wasn't anything to do with my dieting or anything. I stayed disciplined the whole camp. It was a perfect camp. Right now, I'm actually a little bit heavier than last camp. I put on a little bit more of a size, but I'm staying disciplined on and on my diet, and I know what the amenities are, and I know I got to wake up a little bit earlier and not depend on the bathtub's going to get hot or not, and I'm going to test everything the night before and make sure everything's perfect. I mean, shoot, I have a goal to reach tomorrow. I got to be under 168 tomorrow, or else Easter's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So the real question is, could Tom Galicchio save Easter from now until tomorrow, or else nobody gets it Easter?
Now, to beat the champion twice and not win the title would be some sort of a weird MMA record, but I'm sure you'll beat the scale. And I want to remind people that 0.2 pound is like 88 grams. You could buy a bag of potato chips that are twice that large, folks. So I just want to put things in perspective here. And right now I suspect that Southern is probably telling himself that he took you lightly and that a rematch is going to be different. On the other hand, as the person who won, and it wasn't really close at the end, you have to be super confident. Is there a possibility that we see you come out in round one and do what you did to Kurt in round two without having to take any punches or escape any submissions?
You know, I'm very nervous about this fight. I'm confident, but I'm nervous. When I'm too confident, I don't seem to perform. I was very confident with the Rick Hahn fight, and I didn't perform up to my potential. You know, if I was with Team Quest, I think it was a fight that could have been won. But I hate to stray. As far as being overconfident, I am far from that, and I'm nervous, and I'm excited, I'm scared, I'm the whole nine yards right now, and I'm just training for the best Kurt Southern possible, and I know he's training his ass off.
And then again, Kurt may come out with a more strategic game plan this time, and it could try to make this one into a more tactical affair over the long duration of a title fight. Are you prepared for the chance that the fight may end up being contested at a more cautious pace, or are you prepared to force the issue if he's more reluctant to engage?
You know, I don't know what to expect with Kurt. I'm not really, I do know what to expect and I don't. I'm really going to not worry about him as more as worry about me, because I can't control what he does, but I can control what I could do. I can't worry about what you can't control.
Right. Whatever happens, my guess is that you won't be a 3-1 underdog this time. But seriously, I actually think this is one area in which the MFC is very underrated by some fans and the MMA media generally. Whatever people feel about his kind of bombastic personality, as we talked about earlier in the show, Mark Pavlich has shown over and over again that he can identify talent outside of the UFC and not just by, you know, waiting for guys to get cut by the UFC and then signing them and so on. So, you know, we've seen this repeatedly with the MFC where there'll be a fighter who's flown under the radar a little bit. People say, who's this guy? And then they'll appear in the MFC and be very successful. And Pavlich will just say, told you so. So it seems like you might be another one of those fighters, Tom. If you beat Southern and take the MFC title, I think there's no more doubt that you've taken your career to the next level. And I think it's a testament that I would take it as a compliment that, you know, Pavlich, despite being mad about, you know, missing the weight the first time, is having you, you know, fight again and everything.
Yeah, well, I put a pretty decisive stamp on it. You know, he was ready to give me my walking papers and fire me, but I didn't take it laying down. And, you know, everybody badmouthed me. Nobody believed in me except the people who knew me. They knew who Tom Galicchio was, and I'm sure everybody from the Northeast didn't have a doubt in me. And it is a big testament, and getting past him again would be a huge nail in the coffin. And I could get past this chapter in my life. Right now I'm at the Kurt Southern chapter in my life. It seems to be two chapters in this book.
Yeah, it also means, too, if you get past Kurt Southern, that most likely every fighter in Canada will be gunning for you. But, you know, that's probably something that you wouldn't mind, I guess.
I think they're already gunning for me. I look at Mark Pavlich already has just been signing 155ers left and right. He's ready to get the guns out on me. And And I guess I got to clear out a division to get to the next level.
Hey, here's something interesting that I came across about you. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I read that you actually are or were a bouncer on the Jersey Shore. Is that true?
No. No. I bounced out here in Temecula for some side work, but I was never a Jersey Shore bouncer. I used to bartend in the Jersey Shore, and now I bartend out here. But I have to bounce to make ends meet out here until I can find a bartending job.
Yeah, I hear you. And I bet being a pro MMA fighter comes in handy under those circumstances, you know.
You know what's different? Oh, it's funny because I was the smallest bouncer, but I was like, if anything seriously happened, you know, it was all on me. Like, I was the one who had to – I was the smallest but the most dangerous. But
yeah.
all the meathead bouncers really like to pick more fights, and I would go in there, and I was the cool bouncer. I was like, oh, guys, calm down. I make my job easy, please. Don't be dicks. Just make my life easy. I don't want to yell at you guys. I want you guys to have a good time, but don't make me kick you out. I didn't want to fight. I get paid to fight.
Exactly. But, you know, and that's a good point, is that did you find with your handling of the situation, you know, because we all have the image of the bouncer in our head, like the, you know, stereotypical meathead, you know, very aggressive, and you do not, I don't think you fit that bill at all. In fact, you know, some people may even look at you and say, oh, you know, this guy doesn't look like a bouncer, you know, he's not your typical bouncer. But did you find that your style of trying to talk to them and be calm to them got you into less confrontations than otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the times when there was a confrontation, I would just stand near it and just let my presence be known that I'm watching without even opening my mouth, just knowing how to handle the situation. I'm a very smart person when it comes to reading people and just handling situations like an adult. And I'm not out there to prove myself to a bunch of drunk people. I prove myself to myself. That's the only person that really matters. And I probably in my about a year of bouncing, I only had one fight, really. I mean, it wasn't pretty for the guy, because I have to defend myself, but yeah, I only had one scrap, but after that one scrap, I kind of lost my patience for drunk people.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, sometimes you're dealing with somebody. It's an even. I work also in a semi-law enforcement security position. I do asset protection on the side when I'm not a full-time student doing this. And I, you know, we occasionally have to deal with inebriated people. And you know, there's different types of people that are inebriated. Some people are violent. Some people are, you know, whatever. Everybody reacts differently. But the ones that are violent and the ones that are hostile, under those circumstances, it's unfortunately sometimes there's no other way than just dealing with them physically and then getting the authorities involved. So I definitely can understand what you're saying. And hopefully your employer that you're working for doesn't handcuff you with bureaucracy and liability and basically, you know, to shield themselves from any type of liability. So I hope that at least while you're bouncing, you have at least some discretion and some tools to make your life safe.
Well, actually, when I went to I stopped bouncing because I actually got fired. It was the night I was supposed to take over and be like the head, and uh-huh. Then a new management came in. They said, oh, you're a professional fighter, you're a liability, you got to get out of here. And in fact, all these meatheads were the liability, and I was the one who could control the situation and handle
it. So that,
and I wasn't the liability.
That's a classic case of lazy thinking or just, you know, prejudiced thinking where, okay, yeah, you're a professional fighter, but you know what? A lot of MMA professional MMA fighters, are very intelligent as you are, have a lot of education, wrestled in college, and you know, just because you're an MMA fighter, it's not that you'd be a barbarian or you'd be a liability. I don't understand that logic on their part. Are they saying that if somebody gets injured because you're registered with the athletic commissions, then there's more incentive for them to sue, or are they just saying that because, oh, you know, you're a fighter and fighters like to fight and therefore you're going to be just a liability to us?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's sheer ignorance, and that's what it really is. They're very ignorant on the situation, and in fact, I know how to handle a situation very, very well, and it affected my livelihood. Them firing me, and it wasn't cool, and it really, really did affect my livelihood.
See, the guy who hired me was an intelligent guy, and he saw you're an MMA fighter. And he said, okay, you're an MMA fighter, but you know what? You don't strike me as the type of guy that's going to be aggressive, and you have, you know, advanced college education. And so therefore, I think I'm going to kind of use my brain and I'm going to hire you because I don't think that should ignorance should exclude you from this opportunity. And, you know, I've been doing it for 3 years, and I'm very good at what I do, and I almost get no physical confrontations because of the way I deal with people, because I know how to deal with people. It's like, you know, you're for every action, there's a reaction. If you're going to break up a fight or if you're going to go stop somebody for shoplifting or whatever, how you do that is going to, you know, play a role in what happens next. And, you know, there's always going to be situations where no matter how you act, somebody's going to just go off the wall and flip out, but those situations are far and few between. So ignorance is unfortunate, and it does affect your livelihood. It affects all of our livelihoods. So it's unfortunate that you had to deal with that. But
luckily, my life has made a great turn for the better, and I'm at the. So far, my career is only going up right now. You know, the question is it going to keep going up? Kurt Southern's the one stopping me from keeping it going up right now, so I got to take care of him. I have a great job, too, as well, that I do full-time. I bartend at the biggest casino in California. So, you know, life's going good for me. Everything's a plus, and there's no complaints.
If you win here, how long are you going to be, or do you plan on staying with the MFC? What is your ultimate goal? Is your ultimate goal just to win a championship in the MFC, or do you want to get to the UFC? You want to get to Bellator, or what?
Well, right now, the MFC is a legitimate world title. We could probably both agree on that. That's like a legit world title. It's not like one of the local yokel shows. So that's a big accomplishment, a big stamp to add to my legacy. I wouldn't, you know, I want to stick with the MFC until I could go to the UFC. And that's where I want to see, because I feel like I could give a lot of those guys, I feel like I could give the champ a run for his money. And, you know, Galicki is a very unique fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to see you guys, you and Joe Rogan or somebody do like him interview you after a fight or whatnot. I just, for some reason, I think that would be kind of interesting. And have you ever met Dana White or any of those guys from the UFC?
I met Joe Silva, at Ultimate Fighters, tryouts, and Sean Shelby. I've never made it on any Ultimate Fighter, but I've tried out for one. I've tried at 85. I've tried at 70. You know, I'll fight when it comes down to it. At any opportunity you give me, I'll fight. If the UFC said they needed somebody for 85, I would gladly step up to the plate. If they needed somebody for 70, I'd gladly step up to the plate. You know, 155, I'd preferably want to go, but, you know, I'm taking all bets, even the side bets.
And that's something they'd appreciate, too. You know, they would appreciate individuals looking to step up because, you know, it's almost they've had so many fighter cancellations and so many injuries, which is a natural occurrence with the sport. But it's just sometimes there's just reluctance on the part of guys to fight. To take fights short notice, and I think that's why Chael Sonnen is one of the reasons why he's been in good graces with the UFC over the years just because of his willingness to fight. So I think that the UFC and Tom Glicchio could be a good match. In fact, I know that. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see you fight in the UFC. I think it's just a matter of when, or not a matter of if. But listen, Tom, it's been great having you on the show. We're definitely pulling for you to take the MFC title and shake things up in a huge way. We look forward to having Mark Pavlich back on the show to talk about his reaction to your fight. And I guess he can gloat a little bit. We've had Mark on the show for 5 or 6 years, and it would be great to have you back for an update as well in the future, hopefully as MFC champion. And by the way, I just got to give a shout-out. Scott Zur, the media director of the MFC, has been phenomenal. He's been working with us for a long time, and as I said at the top of the show, the MFC really understands the non-traditional media, the online media, and they really work with us guys to make it easier for us. I can interview any MFC fighter I want to. Now, you look at Bellator, you look at some of these other promotions like the UFC, it's hard because they want their fighters to go on you know, the big shows and you know, the television shows. And so, like, you know, guys like us get lost in the wind, so to speak. But I just want to give a shout out to Scott Zur, who I think does a very, very good job. Before I let you go, is there any information we should give out to people on where they could check you out online? I know you're on Twitter, but like most people, you probably don't have the time for it just yet. Is there a Facebook or any other sponsors that you want to mention?
Well, I want to thank my three sponsors. My Primal Cravings, they're my food prep sponsor. They got my back for this fight. It's nice to go home and just have a meal already dropped off every other day. My meals are prepped, dropped off. All they got to do is microwave them for a minute. It's very nice to have it made by a chef. East Street Bagels, we're always holding me down. Best bagels you could get in Jersey. Your great Italian deli and dedicated tattoos and clothing. They hold me down. But right now, I don't have any major clothing sponsor. I don't have anything. All these sponsors are telling me no, and it seems to be the story of my life. And you know what? If you guys don't want to get behind me now, you're not going to be able to get behind me when I'm big. I don't need your money, but I could really use the support. And if anybody wants to step it up and put their label on a good guy, I'll rep it to the fullest.
Tom, where is Key Street Bagels?
East Street Bagels is in Wall Township.
Oh, wow.
Belmar, it's on the Belmar Wall border.
Oh, okay.
I used to actually work there for a little bit.
Oh, wow.
When I was going through my surgery. He gave me a job when I was in need. His name's Gus, great guy, rolls jiu-jitsu. I think he's a brown belt by now. Yeah, go in. Yeah, I mean, the uniform was the East Street shirt and a swimsuit, you know, some board shorts. So, dude, they make a good bagel. They get all the dough from New York. I believe it's Brooklyn because they get the best water there. It's an Italian deli. You go in. They close at 2 o'clock. Go in. You can either get a breakfast sandwich or lunch. You can get some cold cuts, some boar's head. You know, it's a really good place. If you're in the area, Bob, you should really go check them out.
Yes, that's why I live in Wall.
Just mention my name.
Yes, I will. I live in Wall. And I'm glad the fact that they serve lunch and all this other stuff because right now my roommate just took my microwave, so I've been eating out a little bit recently, and I'm definitely going to check it out. I live right by there, so I'll definitely have
to. It's on the corner of 35 and Belmar Boulevard, right across the street from the Workout World and the ShopRite and that little shopping center. Man, they make a good bagel. I miss it every day. I can't wait till after this fight when I go back to Jersey and I can pig out. As far as reaching me, you can reach me on either Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. It's Tom Glicchio, T-O-M, and the last name is spelled G-A-L-L-I-C-C-H-I-O. I have to put that out there because nobody will know how to spell it.
And your Twitter feed is Tom the Tank 5?
No, that is my old one. That got hacked. It's at Tom Glicchio.
Okay. Okay, good. All right, yeah. And that's the spelling is G-A-L-L-I-C-C-H-I-O.
Yes, yes, you got it, 100%.
That's not that difficult to spell, actually. It makes sense. And just one last question: where are you after this fight? Now you're training. You're over on the West Coast right now, but is that where you make your residence? Are you still a resident of New Jersey?
I'm a resident of California. I've started to grow my roots, started to plant my roots in here. California's been good to me. When I first came out here, kind of eat me up and spit me out a little bit, but
yeah.
Now I'm back, and I got my roots, and I'm the East Coast cat. You know, our sharp personality and our quick wit, they're not really used to it over here, but it definitely helps, and I just love my gym, love my teammates, nothing but positive, love the students who come here, just all positive things are here. I love my job, I love everything about where I'm at in my life, and the weather is awesome out here.
Yeah, yeah. I spent a little time in California, and the stage that you talked about, the California eating you up and spitting out everything, that happened to me, and I never recovered. I retreated back to New Jersey, and I'm a Central Jersey guy, and I think I'm going to live here the rest of my life because I love New Jersey, I really do. But you know, in your case, your career takes you elsewhere. So you got to go for where it's best for you, and I'm sure undoubtedly you still in your heart are a New Jersey guy, and people recognize you as being from New Jersey, having grown up here and having roots here. But that's where your career takes you, and I'm glad that you're doing well in California, and you sound happy, and we wish you the best of luck. We really do, Tom. It's been great having you on the program finally.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad. Anytime, wherever I'm at, you guys could always have me on, Bob. I always rep Jersey to the fullest. I still feel like my heart's there. People always ask me when I'm going to come home. I say, when the wind blows, I'll come home. Because that's kind of where my life is at right now. I feel like a modern-day cowboy. Where the wind blows, I could hop on a plane within 2-3 hours and be wherever I have to be.
That's awesome. All right, Tom, thank you very much, and good luck on May 9th at, I believe, MFC 39 against Chris Sutton.
Absolutely. See you guys then. I'll see you guys in your living room when you're watching me.
Take care, brother. Thank you, Tom.
Take it easy.
Good luck. All right, that was Tom Galicchio here on Carson's Corner. Yes, very, very good interview, about 40 minutes or so, and we're very, very proud about him, and it's good that he's in a really good position in his life, and seems like one of these guys that's very, very down to earth. And, when you hear fighters say, you know, anytime that they'll have us interview him with Tom, I definitely know that's the case. And we've heard that from a lot of fighters over the years. And some of these guys, when they reach a certain level, you know, that's it. I'll give you one example. I don't care. I had Shane Carwin on in 2008 or 2009, right before he fought Christian Welish, and he wasn't well known at the time. I think Phyllis Lee was managing him, I believe, and she hooked us up, and willing to come on, came on the show, and said, yeah, we said, when you become heavyweight champion, make sure you come back. He said, oh, yeah, no problem. Oh, yeah. And so, a few years later, I go to try to contact him. And I can't even get in contact with him. I got to go through a manager who, it's like taking a deposition here. And then his manager denied me. And then I come to find out another guy that Shane and I both know who is very active in the MMA scene. I'm not going to tell you what state or anything, but say, and this is a guy that's known Shane for a long time. Didn't same experience. This guy wouldn't let Shane talk to anybody, and I think there's a little bit of accountability on people's parts like that. But whatever. All right, we're gonna take a brief timeout. We'll be right back after this brief timeout.
Thank you.
questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life's lessons and to help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, and I'm proud to boast. I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach. To never and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach. To one who will always be known as the
This is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
That's right, David K. Johnston. This is Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. All right, we're just about out of time. There's going to be no Eric Prindle on the show. We got a late start, but hopefully Eric will be on next week. I want to remind you, you can visit me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And like the Carson's Corner Facebook page at Carson's Corner 13, facebook.com/Carson's Corner 13. We will be releasing a political show very, very soon. Got a lot to talk about there. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.